Welcome back to the Fantasy Rocket Nation's Football Podcast. I'm Nate Edwards. That's Brandon BK Kiley. This is Before the Box Score, and it's game week. Oh my God, we have everything to talk about. BK, what in the Missouri football world? What didn't happen today?
Well, they're starting a true freshman corner against two first-round wide receivers this weekend, so that's going to be fun. Although I am actually legitimately excited about that. We'll get into that here in a little while. But yeah, I mean, they've got opt-outs that have taken place. They have guys that are back with the program after like disappearing for a year mysteriously. They are going to be without, I think it's like seven guys. They have 69 scholarship players this week. There's a lot going on going into this game. That being said, it's game week. There was no guarantees that we were going to be here to begin with. The fact that they are even playing this game is a win. Now, they're going to lose this game, but the fact that they are playing it is a win, and I'm excited to talk about it with you here today.
I'm supposed to be the negative one.
It's Alabama. I can be positive as much as I want to be next week whenever they go to the always overrated Tennessee. I'm more than happy to do that. That being said, this week against Alabama, I'm going to play the role of, yeah, Alabama's good. I'm pretty comfortable playing that role.
Well, we do have some good news to actually kick this whole thing off. Now, it's good news looking towards the future because Mizzou kicked off their 2022 recruiting class with Max Wisner. Oh, I hope it's Wiz. We get to call him the Wiz Kid.
I feel like it's going to be Wiz either way for you.
Yeah, it's going to be Wiz forever for the rest of my life. Anyway, Max is a tight end, three-star tight end. He's 5.6 rating out of Rivals. 24th best tight end according to Rivals. 24th best player available to Missouri out of Lee Summit, which produced Drew Locke. So that's a pretty good pedigree right
about
there.
About 10 minutes away from that.
That's right. Oh, hey, look at you,
right.
Local boy. So 6'6", 240 in high school. That's a big kid. We do need more tight ends. You know, you always need tight ends, especially if you're Missouri. We'll be losing, you know, possibly, you know, we'll be at two or we'll be at four after 2 years from now. So you'll be the next one that comes up. There's been a lot happening, BK, but do you have any thoughts about Max, the tight end from Lee Summit?
It's just good get for Eli Drinkwitz. You know, the fact that he's getting a 2022 kid this early in the process cannot be seen as a bad thing. And the fact that he's doing it for a local kid, which is something that we've talked so much about on this podcast and Mizzou fans in general have talked about over the years. That's good. Like, there is no bad takeaway from this, especially when it's a decently rated three-star kid from the area. It's also another continuation of a trend that we've seen under Eli Drinkwitz. He has six in-state players in this upcoming class. He's also got Tyler Macon, of course, from just across the state line at in East St. Louis. That's seven kids from basically the immediate distance, 100 miles one way or the other, from Mizzou in this upcoming class. And then add another one, eight, if you add that, for next year. That's damn good. I mean, there's nothing poor that you can say about that. It's been one of the biggest questions that I had coming into the Eli Drinkwitz regime was what he was going to do on the recruiting trail, and it's been answered with positives at every step. They are now ranked 21st in the 2021 recruiting class, and now he picks up a three-star in the 2022 from in-state. I love it, man. It's awesome.
One of the things, and we'll get into the depth chart later. One of the things that I saw a couple of people mention is a lack of Missouri players on the current Missouri roster. That's not Drinkwitz's fault, right? He inherited almost this entire team. He salvaged the recruiting class late in the process. So who he's starting is not really his absolute final pick. But even if you are one of those people who says there's not enough Missouri kids or there's too many two stars, you know, starting, he's working on it, okay? He's got, like you said, one of the better, best recruiting classes Missouri's ever seen in quite some time so far. And he's, I think I said this on a previous podcast, but of the top 15 kids in the 2022 Missouri high school recruiting class, he has offered all but one. So he is really trying to get the Missouri circuit into the University of Missouri football team. So he is getting there, and this is just another building block in that step. So, You like to see it.
Yeah, and I mean, if you want to trace back why they are so light on Missouri kids, it's not hard to find. They had one Mizzou commit in the class of 2017. Those are basically their seniors right now. That's the Kobe Whiteside and Nikhil Byers class. And then if you go back to 2018, mm-hmm. I believe they had three Missouri kids in that class as commitments. And then, by the way, the only Missouri commit in 2017 was Deron Davis, who never made it to campus. So
they never had
a commit in the 2017 class. They had three total from 2017 and 2018. Those are the kids that you're supposed to be counting on for this upcoming season. Now, that's not exactly the case because those classes didn't go well for Mizzou as a whole. But those are the classes that you're supposed to be expecting to start this year. And that's why you don't see many Mizzou guys on the updated 2-deep. So, but if you just to kind of give a little context as to why that is the case, it's not on Drinkwitz. That's on the previous regime, and more specifically, the 2017 and 2018 recruiting classes as to why they're missing all of those kids.
Well said. So we've got a little bit of good with the recruiting side. Now we got the bad. Dave Manner was just dropping nuclear bombs on Twitter today with all the updates. So we've got a bunch of guys who are out. Now, Chris Daniels and Maurice Massey were already COVID opt-outs for this season. That's fine. They don't want to risk it. I don't want them to risk it. Good luck. We'll see you in 2021. Now we get hit with the injuries. Tight end Brendan Scales, who was just perpetually on the cusp of breaking through, out for the season with the foot injury. Thalen Robinson, possible backup center candidate, possible backup tackle. He is out. He is opting out for 2020. That's fine. Good for you, kid. Hyron White, the projected starting tackle, probably left tackle, done for the season. And Jatorian Hansford, which arguably has the highest ceiling of our defensive ends, out for the season. BK, all of these suck. Would you like to pick out one in particular that sucks the most?
Yeah, Hyron White.
I mean,
he was the guy that was supposed to protect the blind side of whatever quarterback they're going to start on Saturday, and they still haven't announced which one's starting. I still believe that it is Sean Robinson.
Same.
I still have no reason to believe that it is Sean Robinson.
Same.
Other than the fact that it's just like a gut feel that I, in my heart of hearts, I think he's going to be their starter. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like when you've got an offensive line that is already considered to be one of your weaknesses and one of your better, more proven players on that offensive line decides to, you know, get injured. And it's not his fault, of course. I'm not blaming the kid. But when he gets injured the week of the first game of the year against, you know, Alabama, that's going to be a little bit problematic, especially when the games that are coming up aren't exactly gimmies against Tennessee and LSU. So, this one hurts. And it's going to be an adventure to finding out who is going to play left tackle for them, both on Saturday and moving forward if he misses any extended period of time. It seems like Zeke Powell is going to get the first crack at the left tackle position. He is, what, from South Alabama?
We don't
know much about the kid, frankly, but we'll see. We'll see what he's got, and hopefully it's better than expected.
I mean, Zeke is, I'm sure he's a great guy. He's obviously a talented player. He's playing the SEC. We don't know much about him, not because he was at South Alabama and we don't pay attention to South Alabama, and not even really because he went the JUCO route and was at Coffeyville. Like that, those aren't why we don't know anything about him. We don't know anything about him because he didn't play at those two schools. He was recruited by South Alabama, couldn't crack the starting rotation, was a filler. Went to Coffeyville for a year, never started, saw five games. Now he's starting left tackle in the SEC against Alabama. Okay, that's where we're at. So either Mr. Powell has made a tremendous leap in the 3 years of riding the bench for the Jaguars in Coffeyville, or we literally have no one else. And he's just like, all right, go get him, kid. You're old. You've seen stuff. Go get him.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say, man. It's bad. It's really bad. And I hope that it's better than I'm expecting it to be, but I don't know how I can expect it to be any good. The biggest thing that I can tell you about the kid is that he is the cousin of Willie Cauley-Stein, and I got that straight from MMUTigers.com. That's all I got for you. He's Willie Cauley-Stein's cousin, so he's probably pretty athletic. That's what I got.
I like that. We're going to find out a lot about Zeke Powell because he gets to go up against an NFL defensive line. So I have all the hope in the world for the kid. I want him to blow me away based off of just averages. It's probably going to be a little rough, but he's all we got. BK and I were actually texting earlier this afternoon or this afternoon late tonight. BK, I think you literally just said, no, seriously, who do we have left on the offensive line? And it does seem a little dire.
Well, listen, I mean, the deep internet is talking and they've got some questions as to who's going to be available this weekend. And I legitimately asked, I sent Nate a text. I was like, hey, I'm not kidding. Are they going to be able to play this game? Because do they have the numbers on the offensive line? And it was like, yeah, why? I was like, no, seriously, can you check in on this for me? I need to know, are they going to have enough numbers on the offensive line? And it sounds like we've confirmed now, Nate, based on your reporting, they have the numbers.
Enough guys. Now, keep in mind, 7 people are quarantined. And if you are following the correct social media circles, you will notice that some of the names on the tube deep are in quarantine right now. But without violating HIPAA, not that I'm a doctor, but without violating anybody's personal information, here's who we have left on the offensive line. Zeke Powell. Okay. Mike Ruth, the sophomore out of Coppell, Texas. Case Cook, our captain. Jack Buford, the guard out of St. Louis Lutheran North. Drake Heismeyer out of St. Charles. Obviously, the transfer Mike Maietti from Rutgers, Mitchell Walter, out of Melville, Xavier Delgado by way of Glendale, Arizona, Luke Griffin, and Dylan Spencer on the guard spots. Dylan Spencer is a converted defensive lineman, mind you. And then Larry Borum and Javon Foster. That is 12. I believe the rule states you need 7. Is that right?
7 or 9. It might be 9, but it's fewer than what they have.
We cleared the benchmark, so we're good. Now, if some of those are quarantined, okay, maybe they are, maybe they aren't. But we have the numbers to play. I don't think they're going to play, you know, well against Alabama, but they're still there. So the game, as of right now, can still happen, and we can all feel good about that. The other thing we can feel good about, because we just lost a crap ton of dudes, that doesn't feel good. I hate it when shows bring back characters from other seasons out of nowhere. Do you remember Trajan Jeffcoat?
I do indeed remember him. I had high hopes for him, in fact.
I don't know how you felt during the recruiting class of 17? No, 18. Yeah, it was 18. When they got Jatorian Hansford late. I think that was December 18th. And then they got Trajan Jeffcoat also in December. I was like, this is it. This is like our next D-line zoo defensive end tandem. Like, this is it. Well, Trajan just like stopped being on the team last year. It was October 6th. The headline, I think, literally was Trajan Jeffcoat no longer on team. No one knows why.
Yeah.
He was just gone. And then June 15th of this year, his name popped back up because the Houston Cougars offered Trajan Jeffcoat to play. And I was like, okay, that's cool. Bye. Now he's back with Missouri. I'm cool with it. We obviously need the depth, but BK, this is kind of like the most random storyline that you could possibly get before a season starts, right?
The best storyline, honestly, I don't say that with any sort of sarcasm whatsoever. Like, Mizzou needs all of the talented bodies they can get at the defensive end position. As of right now, according to the depth chart that they posted today, Chris Turner and Isaiah McGuire are battling it out for one of your defensive end positions. And on the other side, it's Trey Williams again as the clear-cut starter with Cannon York as his backup.
Walk on.
They need bodies there. They really do. They don't have anybody right now that you should have any sort of expectations that they're going to be really like high level pass rushers. And that's not a shot at any of these guys, but we've seen them. We've seen what they can bring to the table. And barring some sort of unforeseen jump in production, jump in their play, they're not the pass rushers that you're going to want coming from the edge. And so I don't know if Jeffcoat can be that for them or not this year, but I know that he's got the upside to do it, and so let's find out, you know? Let's see what he can do, and I don't know if he's in game shape right now. Maybe he can give you five snaps on Saturday. Yeah. That's perfectly fine, but maybe you get three, four games into the year, and he's at least a rotation player, and I got to be honest with you, I would accept one of those right now if he's just a third down pass rusher. Let's
Cannon
see what
York,
he's got.
Walk on from Lebanon, Missouri. Lebanon is, I believe, where Justin Britt went, so that's kind of cool. 6'3", 235, defensive lineman in the SEC. Little light.
Well, he's grown. He came in at 6'2", 200 to put on 35 pounds.
I'm sure Cannon's a great player. I'm not sure if he's going to cut it over a 10-game season. So, yeah, we do need some depth behind him. But good for him for cracking the two deep. Speaking of the two deep, we got as a sophomore, by the way.
It's not like this is some redshirt freshman who's been around campus for 6 years. He's a redshirt sophomore who has now cracked the two deep for Mizzou at defensive end after coming in as a walk-on. Like, it is a really cool story for Cannon York. I just wish for Mizzou that they didn't need a really cool story to crack the two deep this early
in
the season.
Yeah, it'd be nice to just have him as a luxury rather than a requirement. So, but good for him. But yes, the depth chart was released. Again, KG Eli Drinkwitz, who's not going to tell us really anything, and that's fine. That's his prerogative. This depth chart is ORed all to hell. Pretty much any starter of note has an OR indication next to them, which, let's face it, we were expecting that sort of thing. I did appreciate the little wink and a nudge of listing Connor Bazelak first or Sean Robinson. I love that.
Is this a hint? I'm reading too much into this, I know. Is this a hint that it could be Connor Bazelak who is getting the first reps on Saturday?
Or is it a misdirection to say, yeah, we're going to list him first because we're actually starting Sean? Or is it a misdirection to the misdirection because you know if we list Connor first, then it's actually going to be Sean, so we're actually going to be starting like, how many ways do you want to go about this?
And Galaxy Brain, 10 ways to Saturday. Here we go, baby.
Galaxy Brain is we're actually starting Micah Wilson. Wildcat that thing all over the place. Let's do it. But yeah, it's probably... You
Audible,
said Sean
Taylor Powell's coming back.
Oh yeah. Talking about characters who leave the show and then come back. How funny would that be? I feel like he just comes out of the stands. He's like, I'm here. And like, just puts a helmet on and oh my God. Yes.
Just Undertaker memes all day. It's going to be great.
Oh, Tapo, I miss you. So yeah, we got Sean Robinson or Connor Bazelak. I do think it's going to be Sean Robinson. Why not? You can play them both. It's fine. Larry,
I think
Roundtree,
they should this week, honestly.
Why not? Why not? Throw Brady Cook in there. You only have three. Anyway, Larry Roundtree, Tyler Beatty. It doesn't matter who starts. They're both going to see the field. Damon Hazelton, Kiki Chisholm, Jalen Knox. That was not a surprise on the three receiver spots. What was a surprise is their backups. When you're looking at this roster, and like we have redshirt freshmen on this team, I'm thinking your CJ Boones. Well, Maurice Massey is no longer an option. But you have Chris Abrams-Drain, J.J. Hester, Jay Macklin, Chance Looper, the walk-on. I don't see those guys anywhere on there. Michael Wilson's not on there. Dom Jacinto's not
JJ's
on there.
J.J. Hester's on there. So is Chance Looper.
Hazelton. Yeah, but C.J. Boone's not.
C.J. Boone is not. He is the one that is notably missing.
Yeah, so like you got,
and there's like 10 receivers that are listed. So the fact that he is not there is legitimately noteworthy.
You have a walk-on in Deontay Smith, the junior from Kansas City, who wears number 31 as a receiver, backing up Damon Hazelton.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's going on? Is that a COVID or is that a skill? Like, these are the questions that you have to ask, and we just don't know. Anything from like the quarterback, running back, receiver, anything other than just a lack of backups being quality that you want to add?
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing is just like it seems to indicate that the guys that we hoped would show that they were clearly above the rest did exactly that. Jalen Knox is your starting slot receiver going into the year. Kiki Chisholm and Damon Hazelton are starting on the outside. That's what we all predicted would be the case. But the fact that they ended up going out there showing all preseason that they deserved to have those spots is noteworthy because, I mean, for Keke Chisholm and Damon Hazleton in particular, those guys are coming into a new program from the outside, and they didn't know any of this coaching staff, and some of the guys on the team didn't either, but it's noteworthy when they give exactly the impression that you would hope that they would. So I think that's noteworthy. Otherwise, it's pretty much as expected. I mean, the backup wide receivers, there's not a single one that doesn't have an or next to his name, so we have no idea still how any of that sort of rotation's going to work. That's probably something that I'm going to be watching for on Saturday to see kind of who the second group is that rotates through, that cycles through. Does J.J. Hester get some early playing time out there? Is Barrett Bannister getting playing time over Jalen Knox in the slot at some point? Those are going to be the things that I watch in the game. But just based on this depth chart as a whole, in terms of what you're getting from your skill guys, this is pretty much what we expected.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, from tight ends, it's going to be DPJ, Nico Hay, Logan Christopherson. Like, they're going to rotate all those guys anyway. So it doesn't really matter who starts. We've talked about the offensive line. Defensive line, we hinted at it earlier. Trey Williams, Markell Utsi, Kobe Whiteside, Chris Turner across the front four. No surprises, really.
No, not at all. And the one thing that I would still like to see, Kale Byers, see him kick outside a little bit.
Please.
I wouldn't have any issues with that. But if they're not going to do that, they're not going to do that. It is what it is. All the cliches you can give out there. That's really the only thing that I would like to see them do that is not on this depth chart. But, I mean, it is frightening how little depth they have at the defensive end position. I know we brought it up earlier, but it's the single thinnest of it, or single thinnest position on the roster by a wide margin.
Yep. And the least talented, which is why tackle/end Isaiah McGuire is backing up Chris Turner, and why Chris Turner put on like 40 pounds to be bigger. So, you know, we talked about this last show. It kind of seems like they're gearing towards a heavier defensive line. That's why Chris Turner bulked up. That's why Trey Williams and Cy Martin are now outside linebackers. Like, it seems like they want to do this blended 3-4 rush in kind of line, but it's just, you got to get talent out there. And if they tried out three defensive tackles, hell, if they tried out four defensive tackles, I wouldn't be surprised. It actually might even encourage it.
I just noticed this, but Montre Edwards is not on that.
Yeah.
Too deep, which is interesting. I know he's a freshman, but I figured he would maybe figure into it at least as a backup. Same thing for Ben Key. Neither of those two ended up making the 2 deep, which is interesting.
COVID-19.
Yeah, gotcha.
That's my only thought because of the hype that those two got and the impact that we thought we were going to get. Yeah, that's just, I don't know. That's my initial thought.
It's possible.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, once lineups, warm-ups come out, we'll see exactly who's there and who's not. So it'll be interesting. As far as linebackers go, we all knew it was going to be Nick Bolton at the weak side. He's there. Chad Bailey backing him up. I noticed this. I forgot to tweet about it, so I don't get to take credit at the time, but I'll take credit now. I was looking at the updated roster a couple nights ago and noticed that Devin Nicholson switched from number 58 to number 11. I was like, oh, he's probably starting. Lo and behold, Devin Nicholson is your game one starter at the Mike middle linebacker position, backed up by Cameron Wilkins. BK, that was kind of the rotation towards the end anyway. Any issue with those two spots?
No issues with it. I think we saw a lot of Nicholson at the end of last year. He kind of stole that spot from Cameron Wilkins. So I think we probably should have seen this coming a bit. But that being said, it was an open question as to who was going to get that spot. I wrote about this last week on RockMNation.com. If you want to check out what I had to say prior to seeing this depth chart, you can check that out there. It makes sense. I got no issues with it. I think they were basically 6-1, half dozen to the other. I don't know that there's a significant difference. Go with the younger guy. I'm totally cool with that. Yeah. One guy that I would like to see a little bit more of this season is Chad Bailey.
Yes.
And a lot of that is just based on, again, going back to the recruiting sites and how they rated him. But he was always seen as a super high caliber player, and we really haven't seen much of him at all at Mizzou. I don't know how much you're going to be able to see of him in this first game, but if they get down by a lot, go ahead and sit Nick Bolton. I got no issue doing that. Make sure that he's healthy for week 2, and let's see what Chad Bailey can bring to the table.
I agree. I'd love to see what he can do. And he got on the field a little bit last year, but yeah, with all the recruiting rankings and the hype, I would like to see him on the field as well. As he moved into the secondary, there were three of the five spots that we just absolutely knew they were going to be manned. Mm-hmm. And we were right. Jarvis Ware at the corner, Tyree Gillespie at the boundary safety, Joshua Bledsoe at free safety. The question was strong safety and corner. And boy, BK, I hope you're happy because I know I am. Strong safety is Martez Manuel. Mm-hmm. Who's that starting cornerback on the other side?
Rick Straw, baby. Here we go.
He did it. And for his reward, he gets, he gets to play against two NFL wide receivers. So we're very excited about the Rick Straw regime starting early. He's going to be able to get his feet wet against the best of the best, so that's pretty great. What do you think, BK? What do you think, two tackles, 15 passes broken up, and three interceptions in his first game?
I'd be here for it, man. I'm expecting a lot of early struggles, and that's to be expected. That's going to be the case for Jarvis Ware as well. It is not a shot against either of those two corners. The receivers that Mizzou is going up against this weekend, I'm not kidding when I say there are NFL teams that have worse receiving cores than what Alabama is putting on the field against Mizzou. So it will not be a red flag if we go into this game and Alabama's top two receivers have 250 yards at the end of the game.
Yeah.
That's going to be what they do to a lot of teams this year. It is what it is. So I'm not going to judge Rakestraw or Ware at all on what they do in this game. I'm going to be watching them to see if maybe they can make some positive plays. If they're playing the ball, there are skills that you can watch for in this game. But in terms of the actual results of the play, I'm not going to hold that against them. I am really excited about it, though. This was a huge recruiting get for Mizzou, for Eli Drinkwitz. It was his first really big get, and this is where that viral video came out of mm-hmm. Drinkwitz's reaction whenever he saw that Rakestraw picked Mizzou over Alabama. This is a really cool thing. He's starting in his first game at Mizzou, and he earned it. He earned it based on his play in fall camp.
He did. I'm so excited for the kid. I'm so glad he's on our team, and I can't wait to see what he can do. Just not this week. I want to see what he can do starting next week. And just for completion's sake.
And then not the following week either. Chase is going to look really good.
That's right, yeah. Wait, isn't Jamar Chase, did he opt out?
Oh, you're right. I think he did, actually. Okay, so the next couple of weeks
chance.
We can do this.
It's awesome.
I think LSU's got some other good receivers, but neither
they probably do. They probably do. But to round it out, starting kicker is Harrison Mevis, the freshman out of Warsaw, Indiana. Punter is the Kentucky product, Kentucky transfer Grant McKinnis. And then Beatty is returning kicks, and Chris Abrams-Drain returning punts, at least theoretically. So
another big one, by the way. Freshman winning another job. I will say this, and I remember talking to you about this with this was earlier in the summer after I had spoken with Eli Drinkwitz on our radio show. He said, hey, listen, there are some freshmen that are actually going to be benefiting from this offseason. The fact mm-hmm. that they're not super behind because the other guys did not get a vast majority of spring ball. And so Drinkwitz said these freshmen are coming in and they're at the same spot as the juniors, the seniors, the grad transfers, all of them. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that kind of came to fruition. You're seeing quite a few of them littered across this two deep that they put out for week one.
Yeah. So these kids get thrown to the wolves or thrown to the elephants against the Crimson Tide Saturday at 6:00. We actually have a treat for you. We were able to get a hold of Dave Osmond from the Alabama Football Podcast, and he was able to share some insights with us as far as the Alabama team goes and what to expect for this week. So without further ado, we'll get into that interview. All right, we are here with Dave Osmond from the Alabama Football Podcast, who is generous enough to spend some time with us today talking about all things Crimson Tide. Dave, how are you doing tonight?
Nate, I am fantastic. I am so looking forward to the season. I think if we waited any longer to record this, it would just be one long shriek. I'm that excited.
Yeah, it's been a long month. We thought football would be coming back, like it usually does, end of August, beginning of September. We got an extra 4 weeks packed on top of that. So I think we're all itching to see what our teams can do, especially you guys. I mean, you know, I hate to be the doom and gloom guy, but like, we got a brand new coach. We got a brand new team. Like, we're playing just to see what we got. You all actually have things to play for. You got a solid team, one of the greatest coaches of all time, and a pretty manageable schedule to get you guys to the playoffs. So, I mean, I don't know, man. What's it like when your team can reliably win a national championship? Can you tell that to me, please?
Well, it is exciting. This is an era of football that we mentioned it on our podcast. We sort of caution Alabama fans and we remind ourselves that there's a clock ticking on this. This is not going to persist. This doesn't last forever. Saban is going to move on into retirement, not somewhere else. But we enjoy it while we can. There is, what do they say? First world problems. And there are times where I feel more relief than joy, than glee. I think when we won the last time that it felt like organic joy was when we made Tebow cry. after that game, Tom and I sat down. We were out in Los Angeles we played Texas, and I asked the question. I said, "Dude, I've got to ask: Are we more excited or relieved?" And he looked at me and he said, "I think relieved." and it's been a lot of that. Mm-hmm. That's not to complain, because it's been a wild ride and we've enjoyed every moment of it. Mm-hmm. But there's a little bit of, I don't want to say woe is me, but there's a little bit of burden that goes with that. Sure. And because the expectation is so high, and when we just beat a team, it drives Saban nuts. Mm-hmm. Because we should do more. You think we should do more. We should get the recruit. We should do this. I know you have nothing of that, and you don't want to hear me complain about that.
It's just such a unique position to be in. There's only a handful of teams at any given moment that can have that sort of mentality. And to have one in the conference is very odd. You know, we come from the Big 12, where Oklahoma was that team, but they would, yep, you know, crap the bed when it got to the big stage. So it's like, I don't know. I don't know what that's like to feel good about my team all the time. So, you guys are rolling in 4- and 5-star guys. You're winning your division, winning your conference all the time. It's great. Saban's one of the greatest ever. But like, what keeps you up at night? What are you scared of? What teams or situations scare you as an Alabama fan?
Well, I think I still sort of pop up in bed when I think of Auburn. I think their stadium was built on an Indian burial ground or something. And I have night flashes of Mac Jones' pass bouncing off Najee Harris's rear end and being returned, 99.5 yards for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. That is the only thing, and Georgia fans can attest, because they've seen some spooky stuff when they play on the plains as well. But it is amazing the freak ball, ball bounces that happens there in Jordan-Hare. And when I allow myself to think about that too much, I have a hard time sleeping.
So the thing about being the best is that everybody kind of claims you as a rival, and especially in the SEC, all these rivalries are older than dirt. And so I know that there's a lot. There's obviously Alabama, Auburn, you all in Tennessee. There's kind of a natural, I'll say a natural rivalry between whichever hegemon is in the East. So like Florida's, Georgia, stuff like that. And then LSU. So like, I guess in your mind, Dave, is your biggest rival Auburn? And if it's not, who is it?
I think classically you have to think it's Auburn. I tend to think I'm from Nashville originally, and so I tend to think Tennessee is a pretty big rival. Mm-hmm. I might personally think they're a bigger rivalry, and then LSU is late, so I'm not trying to not answer your question. I think Tennessee for me is probably the one that has the most sort of juice to it, but that Auburn, there's a lot of genuine dislike there.
So I guess here's another way of framing it. Which team do you hate the most? It doesn't even have to be a rival. Which team do you hate playing the most?
Which team do I hate playing? That's going to be Auburn.
Auburn again? Yeah, so that's that's clearly your rival then. Like, it seems like if you hate playing them, like, you know it's real.
Yeah, that's one team I probably have a firm dislike for. We won't yet. Now, give us some time. We won't yet hold it against Drink that he coached under Malzahn, but we'll keep a close eye on that.
That's fair. That's fair. Well, kind of getting into the teams as they're currently constructed. You know, obviously with you had the tremendous Tua Tagovailoa for, you know, for 2.5, kind of depending on how you view it. As far as the years that he was active as your quarterback, and he was great and won you guys a national championship, like he's off in the NFL. Awesome. Cool. He gets injured against Mississippi State, and your starter for the last four games was a guy named Mac Jones. And as far as I understand, Mac's going to be your starter. And last year, over four games, he had like 1,500 yards, 14 touchdowns, three interceptions. Basically, if you projected that out to 13 games, he would have been like 315 of 458 with like 4,800 yards, 45 touchdowns, nine interceptions, which is basically Baker Mayfield's Heisman season. Now, I'm not trying to blow him out of proportion, but are you expecting like Baker Mayfield type of production from Mac Jones? Or B, do you just expect okay quarterback play? Or C, is it going to be Bryce Young?
Well, there's more than one answer, I think, that foots the bill there, right? I think we're going to see glimpses of Mac play really, really well. I don't think over a sustained season that he's that level of quarterback. But I would be less surprised if he were to play at that level consistently than if he were to come out and just bomb over the season. So I think that he has more upside than probably the fan base has expected. But you mentioned a name there, Bryce Young. I think as the season goes on, I think he's going to be the player to watch. He's the five-star recruit. He's the you know, number one quarterback. He's all of that. He's the guy that made, you know, Talia Tungalovoa transfer. He is all of those things, the personification of all of those things. And I think if, you know, distilling this down, I think he's learned a couple of lessons. If Tua were not brought in at almost the last minute of the championship game, Tua was going to transfer. And so I don't think Saban wants Bryce to get to that level of sort of end of the rope.
Yeah.
I also believe that Saban has played close attention to how Kirby has managed the quarterback room in Georgia.
God, yeah.
And he's sort of crapped the bed on that one. And I think, you know, written or taped to the bottom of a desk drawer somewhere in Tuscaloosa, you know, there's an envelope that says, if we can only have one quarterback, who is it going to be? And inside that envelope is Bryce Young's name. Mm-hmm. And so what we're going to see is Mac's going to start. He's going to hold down the fort. He may actually see disproportionate play in week one because it's preparation for Texas A&M in week two. But as the season progresses, watch for Bryce Young to get opportunities, you know, meaningful opportunities, two-minute offense, four-minute offense, coming in from half, those types of situations, and get more opportunity with the starters. I won't go so far as to say that Bryce is the starter by the end of the season, although that wouldn't surprise me, but it will be clear by the end of the season that Bryce is the next man up for 2021.
All right. Well, you know, that makes the most sense. Obviously, you don't come in as that highly regarded of a recruit and then, you know, just run an option keep the entire time unless you're Justin Fields at Georgia. But I mean, just an embarrassment of riches for you guys to lose such a transcendent quarterback and then pick up another one. And speaking of transcendent talents, I mean, Najee Harris is a tremendous running back. I was shocked that he was going to come back for this year. Last year, he ran for 1,200 yards and 13 touchdowns, I think. And, you know, he's also pretty good in the passing game. You know, 35 targets last year, 300 yards, 7 touchdowns through the air. So obviously he's a threat in a couple different ways. The surprising thing to me is that he's not like he's not going to bust a big run on you guys, on anybody, right? I think as an offense, you guys were 97th as far as big plays through the ground, which I kind of feel like that's Alabama's bread and butter, at least in the old school years. Is there any concern about Najee not being able to break a big one? And is there any indication that maybe he's learning to do that a little bit better for this year?
Yeah, I think that he spent a lot of time this offseason doing speed training. There's Najee has put out sort of a YouTube series, and I've watched the first two videos, and the second one really focuses on time that he spent at a speed training lab in Houston over the summer. It's really impressive. I think he does have more burst. I think that practice reports, not that we get to go to practice, but sure. Hearing reports from practice that he is showing more burst in the open field. So I think we're going to get to see that from Najee. What I think, and this is sort of the tempering that that I'm trying to do with some of our Alabama fans, is, you know, and it's the idea that more than one thing can be true at once. Najee Harris is going to be a better player this year than he was last year, but his numbers won't prove it. Brian Robinson, a fellow senior, another big running back, was underwhelming last year. I think he's bounced back. He's poised for a big year. And Trey Sanders, I don't have insider scoop, but I landed at a bar stool next to a guy that works in the football office last year. And we had a conversation, and he said Trey Sanders is the best running back in the building. And he missed last season with injury. So I think we have three backs that top, you know, probably 600-700 yards. Najee has a phenomenal season. I think you have to look at his individual play than his aggregate stats. But I think we distribute the ball more at the running back position, and it will feel like a down year for Najee, but his talent will be on display without question.
You know, kind of talking about, you know, 2019 versus 2020, your receiving core loses Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs. Now you still got Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, but those four together were dynamite. And now you cut that in half. You still got Najee Harris, still Waddle and Smith. Outside of those three guys, does anybody else even really need to show up? Obviously, you recruit very well at that position, but could you get away just throwing to Smith, Waddle, and Harris? And if you do need someone else to step up, who would that be?
Well, I think you absolutely could. I think that when you think of Ruggs and Jeudy, you don't replace guys like that. You just recognize that, hey, we had a moment in time where we had four wide receivers that you know, barring injury, that are all going to go in the first round of the draft. And you just have to recognize that this is something that doesn't happen. This is a glitch in the matrix or something, that all of those guys were sort of lined up at once. I do think that, you know, getting Smitty back and Jalen, you know, Smitty has the opportunity to, if he replicates his production last season, and he had the most touchdowns and the most yardage of the other receivers. If he replicates that in 2020, he's going to be right at the cusp of being Alabama's all-time wide receiver. And sort of given the recent run, you know, stars in the NFL, right? That's pretty impressive. And so I look for there to be really a concerted effort to get that stat for him. Saban's kind of softened up on that type of thing over the years. Jalen Waddle is, you know, Jalen Waddle. But the player that is right now positioned at the number three receiver is John Metchie. I think he's going to be a name to watch. He played a little bit last year as a freshman. You know, it's a tough rotation to crack.
Yeah.
But I think Metchie is another athletic, a little shorter, but a little athletic guy. I think he's going to get behind coverages. Slade Bolden, I'll give you sort of the five. Slade Bolden was a freshman last year, has a little bit of a cult following. He came in as a Wildcat quarterback, actually threw for a touchdown, ran for a bunch of first downs. I think he's going to get sort of an increased package, and he's going to be like a little tinker toy that's going to be part of the offense. And freshman Javon Baker is positioning himself as sort of the next guy up at the wide receiver position. So it's Smitty and Waddle, clearly. And then you could sort of put a blanket over the others, but there's some talent there. I promise you that.
Oh, it's Alabama. There's talent everywhere. You got to fall out of your ears, man.
No, we have some guys later further down the roster that I think Slade and Javon, I think they're going to play big, and I think they're going to get some passes Saturday. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with them.
Yeah. Now on the other side of the ball, you know, Alabama last year was, again, everything is a, you know, a product of perception. The Alabama secondary was tremendous. One of the best secondaries in the entire country. I think they ranked second in pretty much any passing category you can think of. The running defense was actually surprisingly a little loose, looser than you'd imagine. You know, a lot of offenses get some 4 or 5 yards on the guys. Now that's a product of them being super young freshmen. So now 2020, here we are. The Alabama secondary loses 4 of their 5 starters, and the defensive front 7, front 8, returns almost everybody. Expectations wise, is it like, okay, well, we got to shut down the run because everyone's going to pass on us? Or how do you feel about the defense for this year?
Yeah, I think the defense is going to be as good as the secondary allows. I think you're exactly right there. And I do think this defense has a chance to really be special. Last year, you know, 5 out of 8 players across the front eight missed time. A couple of guys missed the entire season. Like you said, they're all back. And I think we legit go 7 or 8 deep with not just warm bodies, but contributors across the defensive front. We typically play a 3-man front. And so, you know, you get to 7 or 8, then you get into sort of a third team there. And so I really think, I think the last time this was true for Alabama was 2015, where the amount of depth across the defensive front, in particular the defensive line, became, you know, not just getting through the game, but it truly, the depth itself became a weapon. And Saban sort of has a theory that he throws out, and he talks about, you know, the little guys, the wide receivers, the defensive backs. He said they'll go and they'll get gassed. And they'll get some water and some deep breaths, and they're ready to go. The big boys, he said, when they get gassed, it's see you tomorrow. They're done.
Yeah.
And so when you think across the defensive front, and we saw this last year, when there's nobody coming in off the sideline, then, and you know you've got to persist, you know you've got to play, then you get sloppy, you take plays off, you miss a pursuit. And when there's just enough guys, that can still happen. When there's an abundance of talent, everyone can go full bore every play, and you know that the rotation will take care of you, that you'll still have gas, late in the game. And so I think when that happens, the defensive front itself becomes a weapon. The depth becomes a weapon. And we saw that in 2015. I think we're going to see that again across the defensive front in 2020.
I'll get you out on this one. I've seen the line as high as 28, I think, at the beginning of this week. Missouri, a 28-point dog. Came down a little to 21.5. Good teams win, great teams cover. Dave, does Missouri have any chance of covering against Alabama?
I mean, no, I don't think so. And I mean no disrespect by that. I think Saban makes a lot of people rich, covering, especially covering first games of the season.
Yeah.
Saban is all about statements and making statements. And if you go back and you look at some of the teams that Alabama has played to start the season, you know, Michigan, Wisconsin, USC, some brand name programs. Not that Missouri isn't, but, you know, the point is in those big stages, you know, Florida State, in those big stages that are truly statement games, Saban makes a statement. Hmm. And so in this season, in this game, the game that's going to start, you know, the season and all of sort of the turmoil and all that, I think Saban wants to really make a statement here. He's not going to run up the score, you know, in an abusive fashion, but I do think I would go the over. And I mean no disrespect to the Missouri Tigers. I'm rooting for you guys. I have friends and family up in that way. Lived in St. Louis for a couple of years, so I have a genuine like for Missouri. But if I'm being honest with you, I'd bet the over.
Dave, you make me sad.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I don't want to do that.
It's okay. No. Hey, we're looking for the truth. We're not looking to have our hand held, right? That's why we joined the SEC. So, well, we'll see. I legitimately have no idea how SEC football is going to be in 2020. It's just, we're all going to figure it out as we go along. But it'll definitely be interesting. It sucks that we have to open up with you guys, but hey, at least we get it out of the way early. Hopefully everybody plays and doesn't get sick and stays healthy. You know, that's just
absolutely
the goal is to finish the season, and then the goal is to end the season. So
That's right. Those are the rooting points.
Yeah, exactly. So good luck to you guys, man. That is Dave Osment from Alabama Football Podcast. Dave, we appreciate the time.
Nate, it's been great. Thank you.
All right, thank you again to Dave for the time and the insight as well. He is very confident in his Crimson Tide if he's saying that he's going to pick the over no matter what it is. I understand that Nick Saban likes to make statement games in the first game of the season, especially after they've had a big loss. But, God, BK, I'd like to think that he doesn't want to take that kind of anger out on poor little Mizzou, right?
I mean, maybe not, but I don't know that it matters, frankly.
I mean,
sometimes you go up against a team that is just far more talented than you are. And maybe you could get away with that if they were coached by a dunce, right? Like you've got really talented teams across the country. who don't always win. Alabama's really talented, and they also happen to have one of the greatest, if not the greatest, college football coach in the history of college football. So, I mean, I'm not breaking any news to anybody. Alabama's really good. They're rated number two for a reason. Eli Drinkwitz earlier today said they're rated number two, and they're rated too low. So, they very well may be the best team in the country this season. They are star-studded all across the board. They've got NFL talent everywhere, including first-round talent all over the place. Arguably, if you want to watch one player that is just fun as hell, watch Dylan Moses, their inside linebacker.
Yeah.
He's unbelievable to watch. He's going to be a first-round pick next year. He could have been a first-round pick probably this season. And then their receivers are a lot of fun as well, with Jaylen Waddle being right at the top of that list, and Devontae Smith being awesome as well. So there's really nothing they don't have. This is a really, really good team. They can basically name their score in week one. And the line that I'm seeing right now is Alabama minus 27.5. They're favored by 27 points. I would take Alabama minus the 27.5, frankly.
Would you take Alabama minus anything?
No, because I do think they're eventually, I think you get to the point where Saban will call off the dogs. I don't know what that point would be. I'd probably take Alabama up to like minus 35. Once you get to that point, there's just no value on that side of it. But yeah. Minus 27.5, I know it sounds crazy, I actually do think there's some value on Alabama at that line.
Well, I've seen it fluctuate a lot. I don't know.
It started, I think, at 20.
Yeah.
And then the news of the COVID-19 cases for Mizzou came out, and it went all the way to like 29.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of come back down a little bit to 27.5. So that's kind of how it went throughout the week. But I think they've got it about right here.
It's, again, this one doesn't matter. Alabama, just our goals are to start the season and end the season. Like I said in the interview, that's what we're planning on doing. That's what we're hoping for. So this one doesn't really count. This is not a game that we're going to win. If we were to win, however, and I'm going over this in my preview for earlier today, there's a couple things that you have to do. Number one, you got to make Mac Jones inaccurate. Projected, if his four-game sample size of last year was projected to 13 games, he would basically have a Baker Mayfield of like 4,800 yards, right? I don't think he can do that. I also don't know if he's going to play the entire game. They have Bryce Young, who's like an all-everything five-star quarterback. So, you know, whether he plays or not, the point is that the Alabama passing game relies a lot on timing and accuracy. They do go over the top because they can, because they have the athletes, but a lot of their passing is sideline to sideline, where it's like a little hitch or a little screen, and the receiver just makes a few jukes and then runs really, really far. If you can break those up, if you can play press coverage and either disrupt the timing or just get in the passing lane, now you're starting to kind of eliminate one of the bread and butter plays of the Alabama offense. The other thing they do is they do a lot of efficiency running. Najee Harris is a great running back, but he doesn't go very far. Obviously, you know, Dave talked about Harris doing speed training. Dude, I don't care. He's 6'2", 230. Like, if he's any faster than what he is, you know, I would be shocked. But if you can keep them doing 12 to 14 plays on offense, at some point, even an Alabama offense makes a mistake. And that's what you have to hope for. So it's limiting the small passing plays to nothing and making them get 3 to 4 yards on the ground time after time after time, because they're not going to break a big one. I don't think it's going to happen, BK. But if you want to beat Alabama, that's how you do it, at least on offense.
Yeah. That's how you do it. It's much easier said than done. I mean, there's going to be really good teams that struggle to do those things this season, and Mizzou is not one of those really good teams right now. I really am going to be interested to see how Rake Straw is able to match up against some of these receivers. I'm interested to see how they're able to stop the run in the interior. I mean, if there is a strength among this Mizzou defense, it is the interior of that defensive line and then Nick Bolton running sideline to sideline. So they've got a chance there. Now, they're going up against a great offensive line, so it's going to be tested, but that's probably the spot that I would have more confidence in. This secondary going up against that passing game is going to be really, really difficult to judge them upon, because it is one hell of a passing game.
Yeah.
By the way, 95% right now of the tickets in Vegas are coming in on Alabama, minus the 27 points, so 5% of them coming in on Missouri. There's that.
Hey, man, that's just, well, I get it.
It is the single especially, most lopsided bet game of the week.
So when the Tigers win, that means it'll be like the biggest Vegas upset of all time. Cool, cool, cool. Awesome. All right. You know, I was partially interested in this game solely from, because I'm a dumb college football fan, solely from a Missouri offense standpoint. I was like, I'm really curious to see what Drinkwitz is going to do with this offense. Mm-hmm. Now that he doesn't have an experienced offensive line, like at all, like going in, COVID aside, he was not going to have that. Now with the injuries and COVID, like it's really not going to be it's not even going to be an okay offensive line. They're going to be super bad. So now I'm like really upset because
you're going to see a lot of rollouts to the right.
It's
side.
A lot of rollouts. It's going to be a lot of, you know, making it up on the fly. There's not going to be any running game whatsoever. So, the Alabama defense last year was, again, one of the best secondaries, one of the worst run fronts, worst, you know, for Alabama, like I said in the interview. Now that's flipped. So the secondary is completely rebuilt, and the defensive front seven is really good. So I don't feel like you're going to see a lot of Larry, at least running the ball. Then you're going to see a lot of Tyler catching the ball, and hopefully Kiki Chisholm and Damon Hazleton get a lot of targets and hopefully break something. But I think I'm just going to be very upset to not see Drinkwitz's full vision on offense for this game.
Yeah, I think that's the worst part, is that you're just not going to be able to know what this offense is even after this first game. Like, we're not going to see what Eli Drinkwitz has to bring to the table. That being said, I want to see individual talents. Like, I'm way more interested in Mizzou's offense than I am their defense going into this game. I want to see if Damon Hazleton can high point a ball in the corner of the end zone, because when I went back and watched his tape at Virginia Tech, man, he was amazing at it. Like, him at the catch point, Hazleton at the catch point is a sight to behold. And he's not, like, a huge guy. He's 6'3", which is decent height, but he's not, like, some 230-pound DK Metcalf rocked-up wide receiver. He's just got really good jumps. He finds a way. He's got great ball skills, and he high points the ball really well. So I'll be interested to see what he does there. Kiki Chisholm is the single most talked-about player at Mizzou camp, and there is no close second. What does that look like whenever he's going up against some of the best corners in the NFL? Best corners in college football. If Kiki Chisholm wants to make that jump to the NFL, and he's talked about how he wants this to kind of be a showcase year for him, well, there's no better tape you can put out there than going up against Pat Surtain Jr. and dominating him. If he has a good game on Saturday, that's going to go a long way in his NFL draft stock. So I want to see what he's able to do in this game. And then I just want to see a healthy Daniel Parker Jr. This is a guy that had a really rough, tumultuous offseason because of the eye surgery. I want to see him look healthy out there, and I want to see him dominate in some of the interior blocking and maybe make a couple of nice grabs as well. So I really want to see what these weapons are able to do. I'm legitimately intrigued by them, even though that's probably not a great place to be at for a Mizzou fan right now. and that's what I'm most curious about going into this game, is what these weapons are going to be able to do against a really, really talented Alabama secondary coach, you know, by Nick Saban.
I want to see Connor Bazelak play, and I think I'm going to get it. I really do. There's just no reason for you to keep any player in this game for extended period of time, just flat out, unless you're winning, and we're not. Don't do that. So I want to see what Connor does against an Alabama defense. I'd like to see, well, I hear he's kind of nicked up, and we're not totally sure, obviously, who's going to be available. But, dude, if Elijah Young's available, feed him. I want to see what he can do.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're going to see anything out of it, but, like, see him run up against an Alabama defensive front. If you want to throw Brady Cook in there, throw Brady Cook in there. Have him throw a couple deep bombs, you know. Just get some young guys out there. Johnny Walker, throw him out there. Chance Looper, throw him out there. Like, just let's just do it.
Yeah, let's see what J.J. Hester can do. Dupe legends. Let's do this.
Put J.J. Hester out there. Yeah. Like, just there's no reason to be conservative in this season, because this season doesn't matter. And especially when you're playing Alabama, it doesn't matter. So I want to see some creativity. Whether it actually executes or not, I don't care. I just want to see funky formations and creative usage of players. And I want to see a lot of young guys see the field. And then I want to make sure everyone stays healthy, washes their hands, and lives to play another game. So that's simple and kind of morbid, but that's where we're at.
Why did they have to put this at 6 o'clock on ESPN? Like, it couldn't have been
the SEC
Network.
Because they hate you, BK.
It couldn't have been the SEC Network. It couldn't have been, like, hidden on pay-per-view the way that they did with Oklahoma's first game.
Yeah.
They couldn't have made everybody pay $60 to be able to watch this film. We had to put this on ESPN, the main ESPN, with, like, legitimately good broadcasters.
Yeah.
That's what we had to do here. Okay. Okay.
Hey, man, I hope Drink has a couple of zeners like he's had in the offseason. And we get to see our pretty stadium with the lights on, I guess. That's all I got.
There will be a good broadcast. Sean McDonough, Todd Blackledge, Todd McShay. It's a good broadcast.
Score a touchdown. That's what I'm looking for. Score one touchdown. I don't care when.
Okay, let's do this. Who do you think, if somebody from Mizzou scores a touchdown in the first half, so let's assume that the starters are in, right? Let's not like pick some random walk-on that's going to score in the fourth quarter when Alabama's got their walk-ons in. Yeah. If somebody from Mizzou scores a touchdown, who do you think it'll be?
Damon Hazelton.
I like that pick. You stole mine.
You could say Kiki Chisholm because that was going to be my other one.
I think
they're not running
two, right?
For a touchdown. Yeah, there's no running for a touchdown here, unless it's Sean Robinson. So it's going to be one of those two receivers. You know, that's my best guess.
Yeah, I think if Damon Hazelton does, it is a red zone fade. And I think if Kiki Chisholm does, it is a red zone slant. If you do like a where they win type of a breakdown on those two players, that's it. Hazelton wins outside going up to the catch point, and I think Chisholm's going to be a guy that wins by being physical at the catch point.
Yeah. So, yeah, I agree. Alabama wins, covers. We all get to go home and watch our team play on TV, which is not always a given. So we got to appreciate it for what it is. BK, any last thoughts?
I have one question for you. What other SEC games are you most interested in this weekend?
Kentucky.
Because I know you're like a big college football fan as a whole. You're not just a Mizzou fan. Like you are a massive college football fan. So what are the other SEC games that you're going to be locked into?
Kentucky, Auburn. I want to see that game. I don't know how much the airplane was made out of Lynn Bowden Jr. last year, but he's not there anymore. So I want to see what Kentucky learned from the fact that they could run kind of a wildcat veer offense when they actually have a quarterback. And of course it's against Auburn, which is the biggest like boom bust team in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll take down the biggest giants and then, you know, trip on their farts and lose to someone that they shouldn't lose. Now it's a ranked game. So like Kentucky's no slouch.
That game's on SEC Network and Mizzou versus Alabama's on ESPN. Like,
how does that work? They got the 11 a.m. slot on SEC, like, whatever. But
Alabama,
I'm really curious to see how that goes. Yeah, I really want to know how that goes. As far as the other SEC games, I mean, no, I don't particularly want to watch Georgia snuff out Arkansas for 60 minutes. I'm not into torture porn, so that's not for me.
Texas A&M versus Vandy. Like, I'm good.
I mean, there is a little bit of a question for me on A&M because I think they lost one of their receivers. So I'm kind of like, you know, this is really the year Jimbo needs to make a jump and prove all that Texas oil money is worth it. So I am curious how they do against a bad team, but like Vandy is really bad. So I'm not super interested in that one either.
Tennessee, South Carolina is one that I'm interested in. Super interested, frankly.
It's like who's going to screw themselves up first, right? Because Jeremy Pruitt in Tennessee, well, just Tennessee in general, always seems to be in their way and overranked. And then Will Muschamp teams, I think he's on his fifth offensive coordinator in 5 years or something like that.
Wow.
So, like, you know exactly what South Carolina is. I know Mike Bobo, the former Colorado State head coach and former Georgia offensive coordinator, is now South Carolina's offensive coordinator, and he brought his Colorado State quarterback Colin Hill with him, and Connor Hill beat out Ryan Helinski. So South Carolina is going to be a very boring run first, second, and third team, and Tennessee is, you know, a defensive monstrosity with an offense that sometimes shows up. So, like, that is a game ripe for upset because Muschamp teams are really good at upsetting just in the style that they play. But I don't think it's going to be fun to watch.
Don't sleep on Colin Hill. Threw for 375 yards and 3 tutties last year against Colorado. Now, he did so in a 52-31 loss, but he threw for 374 yards and 3 touchdowns. And I'm not going to mention those 2 interceptions that he also threw. Don't need to.
He knows the system, man. He knows that Mike Bobo hand off the ball system.
I kind of like Hollinsky too. Like, his numbers aren't going to wow you, but I kind of liked what I saw from Hollinsky last year.
He was a freshman thrown into the deep end at the most important position in sports. Like, he did pretty well, all things considered. So, I'm whatever, man. Muschamp probably gets – I don't think anyone's going to get fired, but I know Muschamp's been on the hot seat since he got there, so who knows.
I want to see
the
– like, if Tennessee's a good team this year, they'll win that game by 7+. Like, they probably win that game by double digits. If they are what they've been, they either win that game in the single digits, 3, 4, 5, 6 points, or they lose that game to South Carolina. It is on the road for whatever that is worth this year, and not much. but they are on the road. And South Carolina has a way of being frisky in these games. They always have. Last year, you saw their game against, what was that, Georgia, who they upset. And so I'm interested to see how that one goes. I want to see what South Carolina and Tennessee look like, because those are two swing games for Mizzou this year as well.
Yeah. And, of course, I'm curious to see what Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss and Mike Leach at Mississippi State can do. But it's against Florida and LSU, respectively, so you're not going to learn a whole lot. But just kind of see him on the sideline and be like, oh, yeah, I forgot. You guys are coaching there. So got some interesting games. I would watch Kentucky-Auburn. That's 11 o'clock Central. That's what I would watch. So, and then, of course, Mizzou, if you're so inclined. So that's all I got, man.
I'm excited. I really am. Like, I don't – it's kind of like the NFL, where because they didn't have any preseason, there was no real buildup for the year. And so it was almost like, oh, we're playing now. Okay, cool. That's awesome. And then you like find yourself getting excited throughout the day of the actual like kickoff game. And then once the game starts, you're like, oh, this is great. Like, football is actually back. And so I think that's going to be what happens for me with Mizzou as well. I've watched less college football this year than I think I have maybe ever, in terms of like the first few weeks of this season. And I think a lot of that is just because when your team's not playing, it doesn't feel like the season's actually begun yet. And then once Mizzou starts playing, and you know, the SEC is kind of important here. Once your team starts playing, I think I'll be back into it. So I'm excited. I'm excited to see what Mizzou's able to do on Saturday, even though obviously it's kind of a little bit of a blood donor game, but there are individual things to watch for, even if the game itself is probably going to get a little ugly.
Yep. Look for our routes run. Look for how the offensive line, but watch how the defensive line moves. Watch how the Mike linebacker, whether that's, whether it's, Wilkins or it's Brooks or, Nicholson, like, just see how they move. Watch Enos Rackstraw, like, see how he covers his guy. That's really cool. So there's little things you can watch and just pick up on things and try to find those individual wins. I agree with you.
It's football, man. We got football.
Yeah.
We'll take it.
We got football. In whatever it's better form than no it football. Is. Exactly. So, yeah, that's our show for today. We will be back either Saturday or Sunday night. We haven't quite decided yet, but we are going to record twice a week post-show. And then the preview before the box score show, as you all know. That weekend one's going to be a little short because it's mostly just talking about the game. But we will do full dives like we normally do for our midweek show. So look forward to that. We appreciate your downloads. We appreciate the subscriptions. Leave a comment or rate us. You know, we love all types of feedback for the show. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Nate G. Edwards. He is at BK Sports Talk. You can listen on the radio, 101 ESPN, on your FM radio dial, 11 o'clock to 3 o'clock. And, of course, you can follow the Rockin' Flagship at Rockin' Nation. We appreciate you tuning in this time. We'll try to do better next time. And until then, M-I-Z.